Taylor, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about your time at HMS Ganges from February 1939. I think you were there through to May 40, one way and another.
Yeah.
Can we look at perhaps a typical day that pick up a lot of different things? What time would your day start while you were there, roughly?
I think we used to get up at 6:30 in the morning.
And what was the morning routine? What would you do when you got up?
Shower. At that time they used to encourage us to start shaving because they didn't like, young lads, the hair tends to grow down the sideburns a bit, doesn't it? And they used to get you shaven and show you how to shave and that sort of thing. They were very good in all aspects. You'd have breakfast.
Now, what was the food? That's a big topic. What was the food like?
The food was, how can I explain it? The bread wasn't cut in slices, it was cut in big square chunks, and it was usually an oatmeal bread. As far as I can remember, the food, there's no complaints about the food at all. I mean, all boys are hungry, and you always felt you wanted more, but... I think it was a very good balanced diet. I often think that sometimes the health I experience, apart from my mother and my wife now, giving me good balanced diets and that sort of thing. I mean, I think the sort of service food, because they were it was carefully planned out. You got all the right sort of ingredients, that sort of thing. The funny thing is that when you're a youngster at home, you sort of don't like this, don't like that. I mean, I never used to like liver as a kid, and I never used to like onions, and now I eat a lot of something. You get used to because you're hungry, you tend to try and think, oh, I like that, so I did a good thing there.
After breakfast?
You had cleaning up, you're all detailed off a different cleaning station. I mean, you were cleaning up the whole of the quarters, polishing the decks.
Tell us about that. I mean, because how far did you go with cleaning? Were you using bumpers and things like that?
The instructor sometimes would come in and say, who plays football? And you'd take one place forward. You find yourself on your knees with a polisher. And you're in the positions as you would be on a football team, advancing on your knees down the deck, polishing the decks, but they used bumpers as well.
What were bumpers? I mean, can you just explain what they were?
We used to put a cloth under. They're very, very heavy, like a big rectangular block of I don't know whether it's cast iron or what. And we used to put a sort of cloth underneath to start with polish on, and a long handle, and used to keep pushing them back and forth all the time. When you got clever, you could swing them from left to right and raise your hand as the pole comes through, so they got very clever with it. Of course, your beds had to be made up in a normal fashion, as they used to teach you. You folded your blankets in a particular way and put them at the end of your mattress with your pillows on top. And then there was you used to clean all your mess, your utensils after breakfast, obviously. And they say the outsides were nicely polished and the heads, bathroom, everything else had to be cleaned.
So after cleaning?
And all around the area outside, skirmishing round, there was gaps between that. And they called them covered ways because it was a long road down. There was the long covered way and the short covered way. And the long covered way, long road running right the way down. And the huts were on either side with the front doors facing one another. But there was canopy over, a roofing over, sort of on stanchions. That's why they call it the covered way. So you could fall in outside your mess, even if it was raining, without getting wet.
So after the cleaning, what then? It's typical day. I know there's no...
Then you get yourself dressed in the dress of the day, whatever it was, and then you go on parade, and then parade in front of your classes, and you were marched to whatever instruction you're on. Whether it was the gym for PT, you'd be
right
in PT.
Let's do that first. Then. How about PT? What sort of physical training did they? What routine did they put you through?
You used to do everything. I mean, there was the master at Shotley was considered one of the highest in the land.
Oh, part of PT.
But yeah, the normal PT in the gym, you sort of, you know, the exercises, arms, you know, jumping, feet astride, arms out, and all that sort of thing, and your rope climbing. You have to climb ropes to the let's see, wall bars. Work on the wall bars, vaulting horses, all that sort of thing. You know, I mean, start off 75 by just banging your hands on the vaulting horse and putting both the legs through, that sort of thing. And then they'd find out who was more athletic than others, and you know, they'd get them doing all sorts of, you know, things, those, you know, sort of somersaults and everything else. You know, not all of us were as athletic as the others, but you all had to be fit all the time. You had to do everything.
What about running or route marches or cross-country runs? Was that part of the PT routine?
You used to have a cross-country run. I think could be once a term. I don't know whether it's once a term or once a year. They used to send leaders out, you know, scattering bits of paper to show you the way. And I remember he used to run along the front by the River Orwell, and there was all little sewage ditches running down, sort of water into the sewage. You used to have to leap these, and when you were getting tired, you used to land in it, so you were a bit of a mess when you and I think it used to cost the Navy quite a bit, because if you were one of the laggards, you know, you got sort of 2,000 boys running around the country. There's a lot of boys, and you'd see those ahead had gone up past this field, turned right and gone down, so all the boys decided to do a diagonal charge across, and it was all full of corn. So the Navy had to pay compensation.
And about how far were you going?
Oh, I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah. Could be 10 miles, I suppose. I don't know.
Oh, fair amount.
About 5, 10 miles. I don't know. It's very hard to say.
And how did you do?
That was one of the... I suppose I was medium. Medium to fair.
And what about route marches? Did you do them?
Not route marches as such, no, no. No, I can't recall doing any route marches as such. I didn't do that sort of thing, no.
Just other parts of sort of physical training. Was there any boxing or milling?
Oh, yeah.
Either way?
Yes, I mean, you all had to sort of get in the ring with one another. And the PTI would sort of look at you and see you're about the same height and weight and say, you two in, put the gloves on, and you'd have to have a bout and that sort of thing. I remember having one with friend of mine called Lou Ellison. He was about the same size, and he went through for a commission later on, old Lou. And neither of us were keen boxers, and we come to an agreement, and we were prancing around there, you know, tap, 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 and the instructor got onto us and said, hit one another, and all like that. But, yeah, we still all that, yeah.
And what about the thing you would be good at, I presume, swimming?
Swimming,
yeah. Did they have a swimming test? And
oh, yeah. Well, I'd already... previous to joining the Navy, I'd already passed my elementary and intermediate life-saving certificates. I've got them there somewhere. I didn't do the bronze medal, but I was used to swimming with clothes. So one of the things you had to do, all boys had to do, was you had to put your duck suit on, which was a white sort of canvassy suit, and go onto the top board and jump into the pool and then swim a length. Because some of the boys who weren't such good swimmers struggled a bit, but myself and a few others who were, we were a bit cocky and used to sort of go hurtling off down the bath. And the instructors had a wonderful knack. They'd tell you to leave the water and you carry on swimming. And they had a wonderful knack of picking up a water polo ball, and they were dead shots. They could hit you straight on the head with it across the pool and make you get out. But the boys that couldn't swim, they were trained to swim. Everybody was taught to swim, and it's quite funny. The instructors used to have a long bamboo pole, and if the chappie who was, you know, learning to swim started to come into the side to grab the side, they get the pole and push him out. And one of the most humorous things I remember seeing was this one boy. They would push him out, and he grabbed the pole, and he started climbing up the pole, and the instructor just let it go. And he was walking up the pole because he wasn't getting anywhere. The pole was just going under him.
Did you do any of the escape tests or things
Nothing like that. That's submariners do that sort of thing when they later on.
Now, what about other things? I mean, were you doing much seamanship? I presume was a big part of what you were doing. Can you take us through the various parts?
When you first join up, you all join as boy seamen second class. Now, I always wanted to be a sparker. Other boys wanted to be seamen, other boys wanted to be signals. Because you've got boys who, A, have left school like me at 14, other boys who went on to grammar school left at 16. To be fair, when we were in this initial training, you went to school, so you were more or less doing revision, on the elementary, some maths and English and that sort of thing. Because at the end of the 4 weeks, you do an exam, and the top percentage got made sparkers, the next down got made buntings, and the lower sort of section got made seamen. Now, there is an exception to that. If a chappie come in the top section, and he didn't want to be a sparker, he wanted to be a seaman, then he could be a seaman. But he was called an AC boy, advanced class boy, and he had a little star on his uniform. So you've got advanced class seaman and general class seaman, and you had signalmen and sparkers. And because I qualified to do what I wanted to do and got selected to be a sparker. And you... then start doing your you split up then and do your into different classes. When you went into the main barracks, there were seamen classes. Sparkers and buntings shared the same sort of mess, but they were in two different classes. But they were in the same mess. They messed together, the same year. And of course, you had to do what they called opposite subjects. So apart from the, you all had to do seamanship to a certain standard anyway.
Well, tell us about, we'll cover that first.
Tying knots and...
How far did you go with knots and splice?
Nothing that I hadn't done in the Boy Scouts, really. It was the sort of the reef knots and bowline, running bowline, sheep shank, sheep bend, round turn and two half inches. Yeah, all the basic simple knots.
What about the splices, which is a bit more...
You were all issued with a hammock at some stage in the training. I can't remember when now. And they used to teach you to... the main rope to the hammock had a ring, and from that ring was cords which went into eyelets on the hammock. And you had to sort of not only splice the main rope holding this ring, which held the little cords, but you had to do some work on it. It was like splitting it up and... making it nice and tiddly, as we called it, nice and neat. It was a sort of rope work. But you did basic splicing, just splicing sort of simple sort of ropes.
So the ones who were going to be seamen,
much more complicated. And also they did gunnery training, you see, as well, the seamen.
Now, what other seamanship did you do? What other courses? What are the basic seamanship? How far did you go? Knots and splices, what else did you do?
Well, I mean, you're all learning basic nautical sort of things on ships, which I can't really recall. You've all got to live on a ship together, so you're learning basic. Yeah, you're learning ship's routines, really, and that sort of thing. We did boat pulling there. I won a silver oar for being in the winning obstacle cutters team. Obstacle cutters meant that you had these big cutters, heavy, and you all pulled one oar each, and it was a mile and a quarter course, and you rowed for a quarter of a mile, then you put up the masts and sailed for a quarter of a mile, then you dropped the mast, and of course that was hairy because you just bang and the things clattered down. You had to make sure you weren't in the way because there was no neat stowing away. You just sort of got them down, made sure nothing was hanging outboard because that was unseamanlike, anything hanging over the side. And it was sort of alternating rowing and sailing. And I got a silver oar for being in a winning crew on that. I used to like boat pulling, actually. And because you had to do sailing. That rings a bell. After the war started, I remember this. I was put in charge of a whaler, sailing this whaler, and there was, I didn't know at the time, there was a wooden replica of a submarine, because they made wooden replicas to fool the enemy, you see. And I'm on the tiller of this whaler, and I can't remember the nautical term now. I was just going, I couldn't turn the tiller one way or the other. There's a nautical term for it, I can't think of what it is now. And I was going straight for this submarine. And being a youngster, I got quite sort of panicky. What I should have said was just, you know, lower the sails. And I hit this so-called submarine and saw it heel over, because there was a replica of a skipper on the bridge, you know, and a sailor sort of in models. And it looked at a distance like a real submarine. And I hit this thing because it just went zoom. It heeled over. And because then I saw the bare boards at the bottom and realised it was a boat. I was just trying to think what the term was in there. You get in this position where you can't move left or right sort of thing, port or starboard. So you did sailing, you did your boat pulling, all that sort of thing.
What about, let's come to the masthead, because I presume you did that, didn't you? Tell us about the mast, because that's a big feature of the Ganges.
Oh, yes.
How tall was it? It looks enormous.
Yes, I can't remember the height of it now, but and the amazing thing was that they had big iron posts with netting, so if you fell out the mast, you hit the netting. But the amazing thing was the netting was made up of steel hawsers, which must have been about an inch in diameter. And we always used to joke and say, if you hit that, you'd come out the other side like chips. That was the boys' comment, you see. But you used to go up this, you go up the mast, and up the ratlins, up the mast, and then you had to get round the devil's, what they call the devil's elbow, the platform, and you had to go out like this, so you were sort of more or less on your back to get round this thing, and then up the next section.
You weren't allowed to go through the lubber's hole, then?
No, we had to go round. And then the top bit was a slim pole. Only certain chaps, you didn't have to do that, as long as you went over the normal mast. But a lot of lads, who were a lot braver than me, used to shin up the pole and stand on the button on the top. But there was a little sort of a lightning conductor up there. They could sort of just hold it or, you know, get their legs... steady in it, but you've got boys who did stand on the button on the top, but we didn't have to do that.
And what about your? How bad were you? How good bad were you with heights? Because
I was very good with heights. In that fact, I was all. I can come to that later when I was
were
in Japan.
Were any of the boys nervous of the masthead drill?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think they must have been. Yeah.
Did you have to do it?
Oh yeah, you all had to go over it. Yeah, and an actual fact, at times when you had punishment, sometimes you went over it in bare feet. Made you go, and when it was icy too. Yeah. And because the thing is, with the rope rattling, because it wavers, you can't use the ball of your foot. You've got to use the instep of your foot, which is tender. So, you know, that was why he was sent over in bare feet in the punishment. It was quite tough. Mm.
Any other seamanship before we go on to the main event, which is your wireless training?
No, I mean, you were doing this seamanship while you were doing your basic wireless training, because you've got different classes, and you still, you know, you had schooling as well. You still had education classes and that sort of thing. They used to always say in Ganges, we believe in training in three things. We believe in training the body, the mind, and the soul. You went to religious instructions as well. In actual fact, I was confirmed at Ganges by the Bishop of Ipswich.
How important was the religious instruction?
Oh, yeah, very important. They say, we don't want Charles Atlases are thick, and we don't want geniuses or, you know, weaklings, and we want people to have any spiritual knowledge. And irrespective of your religion, you all got, you know, religious instructions. And, you know, if you're a Catholic or Baptist or Church of England, that sort of thing.
And what about the wireless train? How did they start you on wireless train? I mean, you must have had a hell of a start with this.
I didn't. Morse code, the first thing you learn is Morse code.
Tell me how they taught you that.
Well, first off, you you learn the letters in your head, you know, sort of A, you know, did da, B, da, did it, that sort of thing. And then they had classrooms there where you all had headphones and a Morse key, and the instructor had a little cubicle where he sat in, and he would send, and they'd start off sending very, very slowly and build it up. And then they all say that you come to a plateau. Everybody's got his own plateau. He finds it quite easy getting to this plateau. And the plateau can vary with different people. Some it's sort of 8 words a minute, others it's 10, others it's 12 words a minute. And they can't seem to get beyond that for quite a while. And then all of a sudden they break through and it comes easy. And they vary. You have to do, as you progress, you have to pass tests and, you know, so many words a minute. So they're building up to sort of 20 words a minute, that sort of thing. And there's different ways you can make the letter, make the individual letters slow and shorten the spaces between. And other times you can make them very quick and give you longer spaces between, you see, so, you know, to get you used to it. And in actual fact, you used to have to, when you did your test, you did plain language, plain English. You also did ciphers, you know, figures. You did code, with, you know, coded letters. And then there was a mixture of letters and figures. And you also had to read German and French Morse, because, I mean, they have certain letters, like in German, CH is four da's, which we don't normally, there's nothing before that. An O with an accent over, depending which language. I mean, the Germans usually put two dots in other languages.
Oh,
that was a sort of da 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 dit. That was an O with an accent. So you had to get used to writing in German, and it was all, you know, just to learn your Morse. Then, of course, obviously, there's procedure. You've got to learn procedure.
Now, were you a natural at Morse? I mean, or was it difficult? I mean, how did you do at Morse?
Oh, I did very well, actually. I was always a good Morse operator. Because it's come out later, when I joined my first ship, they saw that I was a good operator, and even though I was a boy and on the boys' mess deck, I was immediately put on a man's job, and I was operating from the time I went on the thing.
You took to it well. I mean, yes. Some people say it's like listening to music. You could hear it like music. I mean, was that how it worked? How was it for you? I mean,
well, that's how it works. When you start off, you see you're reading the individual dots and dashes, but as you get faster, it's just like music. I mean, if you turn around I played you a tune, and you turn around and said, "Oh, that's the such a concerto," you know, because you recognise the music. But if I said to you, "Give me the individual notes of that," you wouldn't be able to do it unless you're a musician. You know, you wouldn't be able to say, you know, la ti da di do sort of thing. But you recognise the Warsaw Concerto, for instance. Well, that's like it anymore. I mean, it goes, when it's going fast, it's just like music. And you don't break it down into individual.
Do you think people develop a hand, you know, as they call it, a method of transmission, yeah, that's identified? Because some people say that they can recognise, you know.
Oh, yes. This is part of things like GCHQ. On ships you had what they called electronic warfare branch, that they were radio people especially, and they could recognise. It's like handwriting. They could recognise an operator. And what they used to do, in actual fact, and it's all out, I mean, it's nothing secret now, everybody knows about it, they would listen to you transmitting, and they would put it onto a cathode ray oscilloscope, and because every time you press the key, the line would go up like that. What they did, they run a film in front of that, which was, you know, encased so there was no light get into it. So then that line, when you made a dial, become like a square. When you made a dot, was a small. And they would, what they call fingerprinting, they could fingerprint an individual operator because we all have the idiosyncrasies, you know, so we cut some of the, you know, you make a V, da, you might cut one of the dits a bit shorter than the others, you see. And also, they could identify individual transmitters when they switched them on, that sort of thing, by the individual spark. So, you know, that was a case, yeah.
Now, so there's Morse code training. What was it? You said procedure. Now, what procedure were you learning?
Well, you have to learn a procedure where, you know, because if you break procedure when you're sending, the enemy again. So yeah, that bloke always does this, you know, because they're monitoring all the time. That chap does this all the time, and he's just changed ships. He's on another ship now. He's gone somewhere else, you see. So, and it's the only efficient way to operate. And of course, in those days, you used to operate the fleet by Morse. High speed maneuvers is something out of this world to be seen. You have, equivalent to the naval flags, you have symbols which you can use in Morse to depict those flags. And so you used to make sort of by Morse, the CNC or the leader, or the squadron leader, whoever was doing, would send this flag signal, which meant all ships would turn together 90 degrees to starboard. And then after you made that, you just go, did it. And as soon as you said hexagonal signal go, you'd press the key for 5 seconds, release it, and then they all turned together. And there was a procedure for that. There was also a procedure you had to learn. There was normal, what we'd call meat and spuds signals, which was the ordinary administrative signals, always referred to as the meat and spuds signals. You had to use a procedure like cosine from cosine, and if you wanted it passing, you know, you wanted your message passing via someone to someone and for information to someone. So you had to have a proper procedure. And there was also a procedure for direction and control of gunfire, because you used to control gunfire by Morse. And there was a separate procedure for that.
How did that work?
Well, when they were shooting, I mean, a ship would tow a target, and your ship had to fire at it, and you'd be up there with the gunnery officer who was directing it, and the ship would send something, it's a sort of abbreviation. Basically, it's to abbreviate stuff, saying that the shot was 200 yards short or 300 yards over, and then bring it down, and so you directed the gunfire onto the target.
And so that was saying, what about codes? Did you have to learn codes? I mean, not Morse code. I mean, code. You know, I mean, you're learning how to decipher codes, presumably.
You basically don't learn a lot about codes in the basic training. You learn that more or less when you get to ship. But you do learn the basics. You know, so because there's all different types of codes. There was codes for speed, which weren't necessarily secure. And that's like the ones you do manoeuvring and all that sort of in control of gunfire. Then there's secure codes, because there's so many different ones, and you have to learn about that. Now, I honestly can't remember whether we did much in the way of codes there or not, or whether we did any.
And with ciphers, is there a difference between codes and ciphers?
Ciphers are figures and codes are letters.
Is that what it is?
Basically. But then you can get some obviously mixed up, and